Hi, hi, and welcome to Null Pointers. We are your hosts, Stephen
and Mark.
And today we'll check in with Mark because he went on a holiday and he probably has a lot of questions for me.
That I do. Before I ask any questions, I think I just have to get this statement out that today I'm traveling a bit, so I haven't got my usual microphone. So if the quality isn't as good as usual, I apologize. And next time I'll make sure to bring my microphone with me when I'm out and about. That being said, Stephen, I managed, since the last time that we spoke, I managed to have so many great experiences, not only on vacation, but before I went on vacation, I was at a conference and I finally could put on the Apple Vision Pro.
Oh, fancy man.
And I must say, it's really cool because for one thing, you're like fully immersed in it, so you only got camera feeds, and but you don't really notice that. It's like you're standing in the room. And it's a bit distracting because it was like at a kind of a conference, and I was like in the vendors booth area, and during the sessions I then slipped over to one of the vendors that had it there, and I put it on, and they had like a huge ginormous screen at the background, so everybody could see what you were seeing. That was a bit distracting, but you just walk around in a normal world and you just got stuff projected into it. And you can drag them and do stuff. And you can also, it's a really great experience. Like here, they had a little demo where you had a little racing car. And I then had you could like walk into the racing car and all that. And it was like no jitters. I remember like back in the HoloLens day around there were some other competitors. And sometimes when you like turn your head or you tilt it a bit, stuff starts jittering and you didn't have any jitters. So that was like super smooth. It is a bit heavy. So I think it would, over time, it would become a bit tiring. But I think it's really interesting. And if it would be available in Europe, I don't know. I might somehow look into it, but it's super expensive. So I don't know. But yeah, it was a great experience.
It is a rather expensive toy. It's still kind of where I'm at on it. I'd love to give it a try someday.
I think in Europe, they're still quite rare because everybody that has got one in Europe somehow sneaked it in over the US. So I hope we'll see more of them and you also get your chance. The other thing is, we will have to see what Apple delivers in the future because right now this is V1.0 and there are rumors that there might be a cheaper one or a more like a mass market focused one, because I guess if you want to get traction, you have to come down from that price point. They did it in other categories too that they have. So yeah, it remains to be seen, but it's an interesting thing. And I hope it will be more than a toy in the future, because I think that's right now still a bit a thing. You got like these cool things, but if you like want to be productive or you want to work, you can develop in it, but you then need the Mac. I have to pair up with that, so it's not a full-blown macOS computer, it's more like an iPad, and in that sense that you don't really get all those pro features that some of us might like. But we'll see, maybe one day we'll walk around with Vision something on our heads. Yeah, we don't have to any more interact with each other because we just interact with live cameras. I mean, how nice is that? Moving along, Stephen, I've been contemplating.
Oh boy.
Well, yeah. So during my vacation time, I was in a camper van going out and about, and I had time to think, and I have so many questions for you, Stephen. And it's mainly like, we all know, Stephen, you are very design agnostic. If I think about something that I would like to have pretty, or I don't know how I could make it prettier, you're like one of the top list persons on my candidate list, because I, for one, know you personally, and the other thing is you also speak my language, so you're like in this optimal world. I know you always say like, I'm not a designer, and I know you're not, but you know enough of design and enough of like the computer science stuff that you're just my perfect in-between mediator for these things, and I just thought like, I've been working again a bit more on front-end stuff using the SAML stack, and I was just thinking, I think it's time that we might just pick your brain again on the front end stuff and look at how can we set up our app for success. And with our app, I mean the UI part, unless maybe the other stuff that is also very interesting that we might touch on in a later show. So, Stephen, what are some general advice that you would give to someone that is maybe starting out with the new .mau app? You might find a new project, you got your entire storyboard laid out for you from a designer, so you know what you have to do, but what are some of your general tips that you would give me?
So there is a designer that's already like half the step in a good direction. Typically there isn't, or at least in my experience, there's not always, at the very least, a designer who does things. I come across quite a few apps that look like they're designed by a developer, and I mean that in the most kindest sense imaginable.
Thank you.
But
Thank you.
I'm not talking about your app specifically, but yeah,
You saw my
yours.
proposal.
it's yours, yeah. But no, like, I mean, it is a separate field, obviously, and not every developer has a knack for it, and that's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But having a designer who has given it some thought is definitely a great starting point. And in my experience, that also kind of means, because there's this separation that you mentioned between designers and developers, there's always going to be the case where the designer designs something where you, as a developer, immediately develop a headache instead of code. Where you're like, yeah, this is a lot of work for something that seems rather irrelevant in the grand scheme of things. Whether it's a very complicated micro animation thingy or you name it. I'm pretty sure if you've ever worked with a designer, you've come across something in that vein. But coming back to your actual question, where to get started, I think it all sort of starts with having a good and laid out plan of how you're gonna attack something like that. So that involves knowing the techniques that are available to you. So that means stuff like styles, stuff like the light and dark mode bindings. I think we'll touch upon most of these things along the way. But like the whole style thing, obviously, is where it all starts. You don't want to be putting every little bit of styling into your XAML files. Just assign a CSS like style binding and group all your bindings in one or more style files, depending on how many you plan on having. At some point, like this style file sort of becomes way too bloated, and that's
I
typically
think
when I start.
explodes is the term that comes to mind.
It explodes, and that's typically when I start breaking it up into a bit of more structure, I guess, in the sense of grouping things in separate files that sort of belong together. On the other hand, you should also be wary that if it does indeed explode your style file, that might actually be an indication that you're going in the wrong direction, because that means you have a lot of different apparently needs for styles. So like typically, I believe it's common to have like a handful of different font sizes that you want to use. Like obviously colors, like a main color, a secondary color, maybe a third one. And the rest should be fairly straightforward. I think though, I'm like I said, I'm no designer, but those are typically starting points for a good design, I believe. And having your style file bloats to the point where you're completely lost and want to split it up into different parts might be an indication that you're going the wrong way, and you're overdoing it. But that's one of the starting points. Obviously, there are many, many, many more. But yeah, what I typically do to make it very concrete in the sense of a .NET MAUI app, I make a file with all my colors. I name them, and I try to not name them very specifically. So it's not warning label text color or something like that, because that to me is very specific. Perhaps I'll have a style that's named that and that has a color linked into it. But I don't want to hang a specific function to a specific color, if that makes any sense.
So I think we could summarize. So I'm trying to summarize this for me. I've been following along, and I think it's really valuable. So I think one thing is simple might be enough. So even if you like work together with a designer, try to have a design that is maybe not too playful or too overloaded. I think it's also sometimes for certain users. I mean, I prefer a minimalistic style. I know others, they like to have like something really fun or really animated. I think that really depends on what kind of application you're writing. If you're mainly writing some boring line of business applications, the animations are often lost to the people because they don't care. They just want to get their work done. And then your app should go out of its way to just make that process that they're doing as simple as possible. So I agree on that. And the other thing I think is like really important is don't inline your styles. I mean, I always do this during my demos, and I think you see a lot of demo XAML out there, like also during presentations when you will see like an error text and the font color and all that. It's just like in the view that they're creating. But generally, if you're building an application, you might have multiple pages or multiple subviews that all reuse, and you want to reuse that style. Another thing I thought was really nice that you mentioned is like keep it simple. Like usually you will have a few colors. I think the max that I've encountered is like 5. And that's like with various, and then you might have some sub colors there. But usually I think 3 is a good indicator that you then might have like as a starting point. And also like if you get a wild explosion there, I totally agree. It usually means like either you have named your stuff not ideally, like you've mentioned it, like name it general, like you might have a primary button, a secondary button, and a delete button or something like that. So you don't name them like, yeah, this is my landing page button, first button, and so, because otherwise you start like changing them. And it also, like, if you got a lot of different styles for your buttons, it's usually for the user, it starts to then seem like very it's no longer calm on your eyes. You got like all these different things going on and you don't know where to focus on, and usually you want the user to like focus on certain areas. And if you got like all these things going on the screen, like things going on as in having different font sizes all over the place or different button styles all over the place, that can be like irritating in the sense that it takes away focus from the things that you actually want to do. And I think those are a really good thing, tips. And also like with the styles, and you touched on that, I think there is like in .NET MAUI, we got two possibilities, right? We can either do XAML styling, or we can also go the CSS route. So what is your recommendation there? Should I stick to the XAML, or should I stick to the CSS, or is it just an opinion war?
Yeah, I must admit that I haven't really used the CSS variation a lot. Or actually, I can't really remember a situation where I fully embraced it and used it. I'm a XAML man. There are obviously opinions on that. People who like to do the code first stuff, which fine by me as well. But for me, I'm a XAML guy, and I think that eventually boils down to whatever agreements you have with your development team. This is how we're doing it. I don't really see much argument for one or the other, to be quite honest.
I think I agree. So I personally have never used the CSS styling in a .NET MAUI application, but that's mainly because I usually build... I know my XAML, so I usually stick to the XAML part. But I think if you got already some styling in CSS, or you got your company styling in CSS, I think this would be a great starting point to go on. I remember when it was introduced back in the day, I think that was still with Xamarin. There was a huge drama around this, but generally, I just think it's another option that you have, and try what, or if you're super comfortable with CSS, yeah, take that option. I think it's on the table, and it's for you for the taking. So moving a bit, maybe my next question that I have on my list is, so this was like the basic setup that we have, right? So we try to have our default styles, our default colors, our default fonts, and then we try to extract those defaults into styles. And I think if you then got like some very specific changes, like there's margin things that are sometimes very specific to pages, would you put those onto sites? Like sometimes you got like these layouts that a designer gives you, and then you got like your default button, and sometimes to align it nicely for that one thing, it's hard to always extract it into styles, or am I doing something wrong here, Stephen?
Yeah, typically what I do, and that might not be very popular, I suppose, but things like margins and paddings, I typically put on the actual layouts, and not so much in the styles, because I feel like it's the style is how it looks visually. So obviously, if something always needs to have a very specific padding, then I'll put it in the style. But if it's a padding or a margin to lay it out somewhere on the page, like give it a certain position on the page, then I put it in the actual page where it belongs, because it has more to do with layout than how it visually appears. Obviously, if you want to put stuff in styles and you want to override them, you can use the whole, I think it's derived from style or derived style. There's an attribute for it that you can use where you're referencing a different style and then overriding the one attribute that you would want to override. That option is there, which is great. But yeah, I don't use it maybe as much as I should. Because on the other hand, if there's also, again, something that is very similar to a different style, but has one thing different, that's also like one of those points where I'm wary of going like, nah, do I really need this? Or is this once again something that could introduce a never-ending stream of bloat to my styles? It's a balancing act, I would say.
I think it's also something that sometimes comes with experience, but I'm happy to hear that I'm not doing it completely wrong, that we have a similar approach here. And another question, so you spoke about layouting. So oftentimes to keep your app like in a, that it looks the same-ish on different sites, sometimes you have like these controls that you, they're not controls that come with the .NET MAUI framework, and they're not controls that they're so small that it's just a button, but you might have like these search fields, or you've got like a special form field that you use over and over again because you got like some certain functionality. Or you got something where you bring in some UI element that is composed of multiple elements, or multiple .NET MAUI standard elements that you're using. How do you go ahead with these things? I mean, I don't know. I'm always a bit confused. There are so many terms. So I think some call it a subview, others say call it a composite view, others call it the next thing, or just views, because in .NET MAUI you have a XAML page and everything, and then you can make views and you can pull views into pages, and yeah, but I think you know what I mean by summarizing all these things.
From a styling perspective, I don't do much different with that, to be quite honest. I mean, in the end, your new view is a type that you can reference. But
yeah,
probably your view inherits either grid or stack layout or some kind of layout as a base, because that's how it's supposed to be layouts, so to speak. Like if it's a control that just put some items underneath one another, then it'll always be inheriting from stack layout, most likely.
Or grid.
Or grid, depending on how, but I think performance-wise, stack layout is preferred in that scenario. But
yeah, sure.
There's also obviously a lot of discussion going on around that. But regardless, like it's because it's composed of stuff that you probably already have styled, it might even already get some styling if you have defined very generic styles for like every stack layout or everything. But in the end, it's a type that you can reference in your style file, and you can set that specific type's main layout, because that type always refers to the topmost layout in that user control or view or however you want to call it. And everything within that will just get a style, like a label or a button or, yeah, I don't see much need for style specific things for custom views.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think usually when you got a custom view, you will reuse your styles that you already have for all the other applications. An interesting thing that usually comes up when I think about custom views is like how do you interact with the data in it? So usually when you write a XAML page, you got a view model behind that XAML page, like in simple applications. And if you have a more complex view, and since .NET MAUI also comes on mobile, but you also have tablets or desktop these days. So sometimes your views can get quite large, like in screen state. And so you also will have more incentive to split up your page into different custom views or subviews. And then the question sometimes arises, how do you deal with that? Do you have like one global view model for the entire page that just happens to have the properties, or do you make like custom view models for the custom views that you have? How do you deal with that one?
Yeah, I think for my case, when I like, obviously you can design your views to be responsive, right? Like the whole grid stack layout, what's it called? Vertical options, horizontal options, all that stuff allows you to at least make your view look good on multiple resolutions, right? But in the end, that will always be the same sort of basic layout. There's not like, it's not gonna all of a sudden have a completely different component pop up somewhere, unless you put that component in and give it some sort of visibility check based on what kind of thing you're running it on, like a tablet or a phone or whatever. But the whole is visible, it does still mean, even if it's not visible, that it is being rendered in the background. Like it's just not there, but it's taking up resources. It's there. It's just not visible, as the name says. So if you do want to go the route where you have all sorts of components that are dependent on a platform, or platform isn't the right word, I think it's idiom officially, then it might be better to just have a completely different page for tablets and a completely different page for phones, or however many types you want to support. And they should, in theory, share the same data because it's the same functional view. So I'd say those pages would use the same view model. But depending on whatever platform you're running on, you're just loading in the one or the other. And if you're talking about a view model that goes into like a control specifically, those I would say would also be shared. But yeah, it's a bit tricky because you can still like, there's no real check going on. You can obviously say that if I have a separate view and that has a specific view model to it, I could put X data type in the top header and say, this is the kind of thing that I'm expecting here. and it will tell you when you're building that, hey, this binding here is off. But if you don't put that there, then basically you can put any binding. You could even put a binding that's on the page level of where you're going to put the control, if that makes sense. So basically what you're doing is you're referencing a property that doesn't necessarily exist in your control, but it exists on the page that you're going to put the control. And that is, again, a slippery slope where if you ever want to use that control somewhere else, where that property might not exist, it will probably fail silently unless you're doing all sorts of things with it that when it's null will crash your app. But I would, at the very least, opt for trying to make a separate view model for these controls so that that kind of scenario doesn't really apply. Like what you're passing in through whatever bindable property, that is the thing that the control knows about, and that means it's an isolated unit and it can be put anywhere, and the only thing you'll have to do is toss in that specific view model for that control. And that way you're at least making it its little separate unit. I think that is definitely the way I would do it. Not the way, well, it's easy to not do it, you know? Like it's
I'm totally with you. I think what I often see is people doing the mother of all view models, where you just have like page, and the page view model just has like everything in it. And it's usually like when you say your style file gets too large. I mean, at some point your view model is so large and you got so many properties, you just lost control. So it's like when you start refactoring, or even if a property would actually go away, it just stays in there because people just don't know if it's being used somewhere or if it's actually, I don't know, I'll just leave it there. And so I think it's like fair to start out maybe with one view model per page, and as complexity rises, you then start to adhere to clean code principles and look at like, well, which parts of the view model are actually not on the page level, but they might be on a custom component level that I have, or custom view that I then like split out into a different view model. And another thing that I find quite interesting is usually when you look at view components that you already get, like either from Microsoft or like from component vendors, I rarely see that they also already come with a view model baked in. So usually what you have is you've got like these property bindings that you can set, but they don't say, well, you need to have this view model. And usually like the bindings that you have on the view, they're like optional. So you can have a binding on something, but you don't have to have the binding. And I think that's also something that you said before, like if you enforce like a certain view model, so you can make the X data type, and you get, and also a lot of, I mean, that's a really cool feature if you don't know it yet. I'm sure Steve will put the link into the show notes and to the learn page or the documentation page for that, because it can be a really great help for you. But yeah, if you write your own custom components, that's not something that you usually, and you put them out to libraries, you usually don't enforce that onto other people, because it would just mean you also have to ship your view model. And yeah, that comes with other things then along, because you would then just have like a view model that basically is just a data holder, and you can't really extend it with any logic or so, or you could, yeah, it's just like, you will open up another can of worms. And I think the other thing that you just said, mentioned like on a side note there, is like if you build these ginormous views and you have like a tablet that you want to support and a phone that you want to support, I think it's usually quite difficult to have like one view that will just scale. It usually requires some thought. So sometimes what I see is that you just design one for the phone, and then it either just scales and looks horrible on the tablet, or you go down the route and say like, oh, now I'm actually on a different device, so I'll load a different UI template. And only hiding stuff will usually end in your app being, or it could end up in your app being a memory hog and starting to go super slow, because in the background you got all those things going on. So I think that was a great tip for me, Stephen. So thank you very much for your time today. There might be a bill coming my way, a consultancy fee bill
yes.
from Stephen after this great session.
A big one.
And a big one. And I think before we wrap up the show, I think it's we still want to make a shout out for Maui UI July, which is running when the show comes out. So and I know that some good friends of the shows will actually have a post there, and I'm also doing one. We might recap the Maui UI July, some of our favorite topics in a later episode, or I'll just brag about my contribution as I usually like to do. So yeah, Stephen, any last and final words of wisdom?
Does your contribution use Comic Sans? That is my only question.
I'll spare you of that one.
We're speaking UI, so you gotta include the best font ever, right?
I'll keep it in mind. Maybe if I want to hear people scream, I'll just add it in.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah, I think it's a great initiative. Obviously, it's for those that don't know, it's basically a blog post related to anything UI for every day of the month July. Obviously, the name kind of gave it away, probably, but it's a great initiative. We'll link the mother of all blog posts that links to all the other blog posts that are being posted this upcoming month. And yeah, give them all a look. They're all great, probably. So, because it's UI. UI is great. That's basically, that is my end note. UI is great. You should do more of it, Mark.
Okay, noted.
Good. And with that bombshell of an announcement by Mark, he is going to do more UI, we'll end this podcast. We've been your hosts, Stephen Davison.
And Mark Halliburton.
See you next time. Bye-bye.
Take care. And remember, UI is great.